This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
Or at least they want to rule Wisconsin. Hey, good afternoon, America. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, once again drafted into duty here to be your broadcast media. I am the guy from bradblog.com, delighted to be back here on KPFK, as we are now every Wednesday at 3:30. On 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, and 99.5 Ridgecrest and China Lake, and of course, coast to coast, and around the globe on kpfk.org. Alright, got another big news day. Why should today be any different than any other? Making sense of Wisconsin's April 5th Supreme Court election debacle. And I mean debacle. We'll be doing our best, and in any case, to make as much sense as we can out of that in a few minutes with John Washburn of Fair Elections Wisconsin. He's an award-winning open records activist and a great election integrity advocate who I've known for a bunch of years. And even though he voted for Justice David Prosser and he considers himself a Ron Paul Republican, I consider him amongst the most literate, most honest, most straightforward, transparent folks on issues of election integrity. And we're going to be talking to him shortly about the mess going on out there in Wisconsin, especially in Waukesha County, where the county clerk, the Republican county clerk out there, Kathy Nicholas, suddenly discovered 14,000 votes out of nowhere in a race that had previously been a 204-vote margin as of election night out of 1.5 million votes cast in an election which has become a proxy battle between Republican Governor Scott Walker and the unions and the people who don't like having their rights taken away for some odd reason. So we're going to get to all of that shortly. Got a couple of items and a couple of updates I want to get to here right off the bat. Of course, President Obama gave his budget speech today at George Washington University. He called for cuts and tax hikes to reduce the deficit by $4 trillion over the next 12 years. He strongly dismantled Republican Congressman Paul Ryan's proposed GOP budget, criticizing it as cutting the deficit on the backs of the poor and the middle class while giving even more tax cuts to the wealthy. Obama said he would defend the middle class and the national promise of Medicare and Medicaid by reforming the costs of health care rather than cutting services or raising prices on the middle class. And he proposed cuts to what? National defense spending? Did he really? Barack Obama? What? Good news. Proposed cuts to the national defense spending, something that, of course, the Ryan budget didn't even bother to touch. He also said he would not extend the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy yet again, as he did last year, according to him, in order to keep the middle class taxes from being raised in the midst of a recession last year. Those Bush tax cuts for the wealthy, a huge percentage of the current deficit that all of a sudden Republicans seem to give a damn about. And that will once again be a debate in 2012. But he says he's going to stand firm. Yes, we'll see. Early word from progressives, as well as defenders of Obama, by the way, has been pretty positive on that speech today, at least on the Twitters throughout the afternoon. And Paul Krugman over at the New York Times said, this is from his reaction to the speech, style, I liked the way Obama made a case for government at the beginning. I liked the way he accused Republicans of pessimism, of abandoning a hopeful vision of America. Good that he went after the Ryan plan, and good that he went after the cruelty of that plan. The substance, says Paul Krugman, was much better than many of us feared. Okay, good words from President Obama. We will see if action follows. Okay, that's one item I want to get out of the way for now. And I want to get a quick Fukushima update. Desi Doyen, my co-host on the Green News Report and producer of this program, joins me now. Hey, Des.
Hey, is it working?
It's working.
Awesome.
You're on. You're on the air.
Right.
You did. Okay, quick Fukushima update, because this story has the possibility of disappearing with all of the other news that is going on right now, and things are not necessarily getting better out there at the Fukushima Daiichi plant, and by some counts here, it might even be getting worse, at least according to this new rating.
Yes, the Japanese officials on Monday raised the nuclear crisis level on that international scale from 5 to 7, which puts it on a par with Chernobyl, the Chernobyl accident in 1986. Now, this new assessment,
which,
is,
by the way, 25 years ago this month. So,
I know.
Happy anniversary to
all you folks near Chernobyl. Right. The new assessment.
Are there folks near Chernobyl anymore?
Well, there are people who live in the outside areas. Okay. But beyond the region, you know, that's been uninhabitable for generations. But it's supposed to indicate that much more radiation leaked from the plant than they originally thought, which has brought some criticism onto Japanese officials, because they said, well, if you know, they were measuring the initial release of radiation March 14th and 16th through March 14th and 16th. And they've known for nearly a month now, so why didn't they say this earlier?
No, and this is something that critics have been saying around the world who have been looking at the raw data, saying, wait, this is worse. This is worse than a 5. This is sort of approaching Chernobyl territory. And now it would seem to agree by raising it up to 7. Now, that scale, by the way, is from 0 to 7. For the nuke accident scale. What happens at this point if one of those reactors blows up? Do they change the scale, go to 8, 9?
11.
11?
If you're going to quote from.
Yeah. Turn it up to 11?
Turn it up to 11, yeah. Now they say that the radiation levels have since dropped. The Japanese officials say this, and they say it's only about 10% total of the amount that was released from the Chernobyl accident. But we do know that in an interview with Democracy Now!, Thomas Brewer, who is head of the Climate and Energy Unit for Greenpeace in Germany, he said that Greenpeace believes the designation of 7 is insufficient, because while Chernobyl involved only one reactor, the Fukushima plant has 3 reactors facing partial meltdowns, plus a dangerous problem with the spent fuel pool at the 4th reactor.
Right.
So all of that combined, you know, should be more than 7. If just one of these reactor units went down, it should be just a 7. But that we're talking 4 different units in trouble. So,
and they ain't got anything higher than a
7. And they don't have anything
seven.
Higher than that. Now,
so,
the U.S. Nuclear Safety Regulator Gregory Yasko, he's the chief of the NRC, on Tuesday, he describes the crisis at the Fukushima nuclear plant as, quote, static rather than stable, because they are continuing to struggle to control and cool these reactors. And Reuters now reports that the workers at the plant are now moving closer to that goal. They're almost going to begin very soon to remove the radioactive water that's been accumulating in the reactor buildings. And once that water is removed, they can then begin repairs to the cooling pumps and stabilize the cooling systems.
That could
take months.
Yeah.
But they're not even to that point yet where they can start that.
This could take years, actually. And
well,
I think
it will
people
take
are,
years,
yeah.
definitely.
And we're still not at the place. Okay, so it's static, not stable.
Static, not stable.
And that could change at a moment's notice, unfortunately, because of the volatility of all 4 of these plants still at this hour. Desi Doyen, thanks for that quick update. By the way, you can follow Desi Doyen on the Twitters at Green News Report. All right, one more update here before we get to Wisconsin. On the U.S. Chamber of Commerce plot that we talked about last week on this show, this amazing plot. U.S. Chamber of Commerce was discovered when these 70,000 emails were stolen by Anonymous, the hacktivist collective, and released on the web. We discovered that this plot was being put together on behalf of the Chamber of Commerce by three security firms, three cybersecurity and intelligence data firms, government contractors all, by the name of HB Gary Federal, Palantir Technologies, and Barrico Technologies. And this plot that was uncovered was for the chamber to target its political enemies with fraudulent documents, a smear campaign, fake personas to infiltrate progressive organizations, to discredit progressive U.S. citizens and journalists, and yes, yours truly, and my family. Me and my family were named in these documents, were targeted, a photograph of me in one of the PowerPoint presentations, personal information on me, and as I say, my family. We spoke last week with Congressman Hank Johnson about this matter, and he is really leading the way in Congress, Democrat from the state of Georgia. He's the only one who's really trying to make some noise about this in Congress. For some reason, the Republicans don't want to talk about it at all, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce being the most powerful right-wing lobby in the world, the most powerful lobby, period, in the world. 97% of their money goes to Republicans. They were the number one spender of campaign funds last year, November of 2010. They will be again in the future. So the Republicans are staying away from this completely, but Congressman Johnson has been trying to get some accountability. Okay, a couple of new points here then since we spoke last week. Think Progress has uncovered yet another presentation from amongst those 70,000 emails that were released. And yes, once again, yours truly was named in this. They were labeled, one of the slides in this presentation was labeled discredit, confuse, shame, combat, infiltrate, fracture to mitigate the effect of adversarial groups while seeking litigation. And what we were talking about here is tools that were created by these three government contractors, tools that were created for the war on terror turned against U.S. citizens. Yes, like me. And so now we have this new presentation, Brad's blog. It's actually Brad blog, but Brad's blog is named here, as is Velvet Revolution, an organization that I helped to co-found as part of the folks who are to be discredited, confused, shamed, combat, infiltrated, and fractured, and so forth. Last week we discussed with Congressman Johnson his attempt to get contracts, copies of the contracts that these three government contractors have with the Department of Defense, who said they would, in fact, turn those over to discover if, in fact, it is legal for them to use these taxpayer-funded systems used for the war on terror, if it's legal for them to use them against U.S. citizens. That was about 2 weeks ago he had made that request in a hearing in the Armed Services Committee. The Department of Defense said they would turn them over. They have yet to do so. So in another hearing in the Armed Services Committee last week, Hank Johnson pressed Terry Takai, the acting assistant secretary for the Department of Defense Office of Networks and Information Integration, about those contracts and whether she knew anything about these three firms. She kicked the can a bit on whether it was legal for them to do what they were doing. She said she didn't know of these three companies specifically or what their contracts were. But Hank Johnson, in that hearing, pressed her to try to get to the bottom of this matter and once again renewed his request to get those contracts from the Defense Department. I think we've got a clip from that hearing. I think we've got.
And I would like to request copies of any and all contracts between the Department of Defense and the three subcontractors, or the three contractors that I mentioned: HB Gary Federal, Palantir Technologies, and Barrico Technologies. Would you be able to provide me with that information, and also the chairman of the committee?
I don't have that information directly myself, but certainly, again, I'll have staff research that, and we'll get back to you with an answer to that question.
Well, I think it's a very important issue that I'm not planning on sweeping under the rug. I want to I want to at least get those contracts and analyze them to determine whether or not they have been used or they have been breached. So I need that information. I am concerned about this case and the way it's being swept under the rug.
Well, good for Congressman Johnson for staying on top of that. His office has confirmed me that they plan to continue to fight for accountability there. And I am personally mighty grateful that he is doing so. Frankly, I would be grateful if anybody was doing so, even if I wasn't named as a target in those documents by this $12 million plot by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce set to use tools on terror against progressive U.S. citizens that they regarded as political enemies. People like, yes, me. I'm a very scary and dangerous guy, aren't I? Okay, there's our update there. We'll continue to follow that as that story develops. Now on to Wisconsin. Oh, good Lord, on to Wisconsin. All right, let me see if I can get us quickly up to date here, and then we'll be joined by John Washburn here momentarily. Just to set the stage, this is the Supreme Court election, April 5th, last Tuesday, between Justice David Prosser, who has promised his fealty to Republican Governor Scott Walker, and the GOP agenda out there, the GOP union-stripping agenda, their plan, their attempts to take collective bargaining rights away from the citizens. Justice David Prosser was thought to have been a runaway winner in this election until just about a month ago when things changed and Assistant Attorney General Joanne Kloppenburg became a representative, if you will, of the people, of the unions, even though she is an independent. This became a proxy battle between the supporters of Governor Walker and the unions and the people who like their rights and don't want them taken away, frankly. An incredibly close race by all standards, even with the new numbers that we now have on this. As of election night, there was a 204-vote gap with Joanne Kloppenburg leading Justice David Prosser. And then a stunning development 2 days later on Thursday in Waukesha County, where the GOP county clerk out there, Kathy Nicholas, suddenly came out and said, well, guess what? I found 14,000 more votes, which gives David Prosser, the Republican, approximately a 7,500-vote lead across the state, which is just about at the margin, the 0.5% margin that would trigger an automatic state-sponsored recount. Those ballots at first, those seemed to come out of nowhere, but then we learned, in fact, they didn't. On election night, as we reported over at bradblog.com, Lisa Sink of the Brookfield Patch had, in fact, found those very same numbers that Kathy Nicholas reported on Thursday. She had found them on, she had reported them on Tuesday night, on election night, so we have some confidence that those votes actually happened. Whether they were recorded accurately or not, we have no idea, because in Wisconsin, though they use paper ballots across much of the state, the paper ballots are then scanned by optical scan systems made by Diebold, made by Sequoia, made by ES&S, all the companies that you may be familiar with whose systems have failed time and again in the past that can be easily hacked and so on and so forth. So the question remains still with one county left to report their final canvas numbers. Actually, Milwaukee is the outstanding county. At this point, Prosser still maintains a approximately 7,300 vote lead, which is unverified by human beings at this time. It is almost all reliant on those oft-failed, easily manipulated, often malfunctioning optical scan systems rather than human beings. Okay, so as we wait for those totals, the final totals to come in, Joanne Kloppenburg will then have 3 days to decide if she wants a recount, which may or may not be by hand, depending on a court order. We're finding more information about the controversial Kathy Nicholas. Kathy had actually come under some fire over the past year. I've been following her for about a year when it was discovered that she keeps all the election results on her own computer in her office, with little or no chance for citizen oversight. She uses the same user ID and passwords for all her employees to access this system. It is next to impossible for anyone to oversee the numbers coming out of Kathy Nicholas's office, which she has been taken to task for in the past, and has simply laughed about it, frankly. I want to talk about her and where we are in this race now with my next guest, with my first guest today, John Washburn, the election integrity advocate from Fair Elections of Wisconsin. He's an award-winning open records activist. He was given the 2008 James Madison Award for Freedom of Information by the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas. As I said, he's a Ron Paul Republican and a Prosser supporter. And in fact, he has spoken on behalf of County Clerk Kathy Nicholas in the past. So he's a square shooter, and yet even he has some problems with Kathy Nicholas. Hey, John, welcome to KPFK, sir.
Welcome. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can hear you great. We're finding more and more stuff about Kathy Nicholas. I know you have worked with her in various ways in the past.
Usually across an open records request.
Via an open records request where you're trying to hold her feet to the fire, I guess, right?
Yes. I have one that's pending from March 1st that is rather interesting, but that's a different topic for another day.
Okay. Well, we will get into that
that, John. It's the short answer right now.
Say that again, please.
You can't have that. It's a short answer. Right?
I can't have that. All right. Well, now what do you make of her her excuse that she did not hit the save button properly in Access, and that's why all of these numbers disappeared, John?
Well, my first question is why is she using Access and not her election management system, WinEDS, which has a Microsoft SQL Server? I think I mentioned before, that's like saying someone who has a nice Cadillac says, my soapbox racer broke down. They're just not the same kind of database.
So she has, so she shouldn't be using this database in the first place, is your first
right.
thought. Okay.
Yeah. And also, Access doesn't really have a save button in that sense, and it's got autosave usually on, unless you actually actively work to turn it off.
Right.
So there's more to this story. And her current story doesn't track for me. How's that? There were some mistakes made, and I don't know what they are, but this ain't it.
That's the problem for me here. Like I said, those numbers, whether they're right or wrong, those 14,000 votes were recorded, it seems, on election night in the city of Brookfield by those op scanners. And yet, so I don't believe she's making them up out of thin air. I believe that she left them off of the numbers for some reason or another on election night. And yet the excuse she gave seemed to make no sense, that, you know, she didn't hit the save button. Adding to that problem, you've got this 80-year-old woman, the Democratic Canvas Board member, Ramona Kitzinger, who didn't know she was going to take part in this press conference. She was asked at the last minute to appear, and she was sort of pushed forward by Kathy Nicholas, who said, here's the Democratic canvasser. She'll tell you what happened. And she basically, this 80-year-old, this very lovely, very nice 80-year-old woman, said, well, as far as I can tell, the numbers jibed. And a lot of Republicans used that to say, well, so there you go. Nothing funny going on here. The next day, Ramona Kitzinger came out and said, in truth, I don't know anything about the numbers because I was just shown them just prior to the press conference. I didn't know I was going to speak. I don't know anything about computers. And I wasn't told about these lost numbers for 2 days. What do you make of that, John?
I didn't know that she had said that. Oh,
yes.
God.
Yes.
So she's just sitting there kind of what? Just watching? I mean, at that point.
Well, yeah, she was not told about this. They were going over the other numbers. She was not told that this information was missing at all until just before the press conference, according to her statement. She was really caught off guard when the press asked her about it.
So they're going over numbers from, like, North Prairie, Eagle, Palmyra, all these little
right.
rural towns, working their way up to, like, New Berlin and completely ignoring the city of Brookfield, which was missing from the unofficial results completely.
Right. Which is the largest, I think it's the largest city, is it not, in Waukesha County?
I think the city of Waukesha is larger.
Okay.
And the city of New Berlin might be larger as well. But they're on the same par. They're certainly all three in the top 20.
In 2006, we now learned, John Washburn, thanks to some good oversight investigative work by a blogger over at Daily Kos, that there were 20,000 more votes said to have been counted than ballots cast in the 2006 election in Waukesha County. We've only got a minute or two left here, John. What do you make of those from somebody who has been going over election results in Wisconsin like this for years?
Well, how the numbers can't tie out is baffling. Let's start there. And what this person at the Daily Kos did is, when this anomaly came up in this election, said, hey, let's look at the past ones.
Right.
And the report that was generated with an odd date, I might add, it's like 2008.
Yes.
Anyway,
right.
It says that the number of ballots cast or counted is this, and yet if you add up the ballots or the votes for the various mm-hmm. candidates, you end up with, I think it's a little under 20,000 more.
Right.
In a race which the Kathleen Faulk lost by 8,000 some and change votes
mm-hmm.
statewide, in a very close attorney general's race.
Right, 8,000 votes statewide in that one attorney general's race, and yet 20,000 votes unspoken for. Who knows where they came from in
right.
Waukesha?
And if you figure the usual 60-40 split for Waukesha County, Republican-Democrat, those numbers start to work out pretty close.
We checked with Kathy Nicholas's office via email and phone, have not been able to get an answer, an explanation for this. She did add an asterisk to her election results from 2006 that say, the number of ballots cast do not reflect all results, only those electronically sent. What does that mean, John?
I wish I knew, and I wish I had a better answer
on
that.
No, listen, and you don't know, even though you follow this stuff, because it is so perplexing and because Kathy Nicholas has made it so confusing and difficult for any citizen oversight. Let me ask you one more question before we go here, John Washburn, that I suspect you also may not know the answer to. In 2004, Kathy Nicholas reports that Waukesha County had a 97.63% voter turnout. That is higher than the 95% voter turnout they get in Australia, where they have mandatory voting. How do we explain these numbers, John?
I don't know. Stalin resurrected and came to Waukesha and got the compulsory vote there, too.
And you're a Republican, a self-professed Ron Paul Republican. You voted for David Prosser. Even you're having trouble explaining these numbers, no?
Right. And on some of the other reports, it lists the number of registered voters as zero, which is another anomaly if you're looking back on the data. So I don't know how someone could generate that report, see 97.3%, and just go, oh, wow, we did really good.
And not do anything about it.
It just strikes me as someone who just doesn't have a good sense and feel of what numbers ought to be. What ballpark are we playing in? We should have known we should have been in the 45 to 65 range, not the 97 range.
We got a lot of smoke coming out of Waukesha County. John Washburn, thanks for your time here. I'm sorry we're unable to clear things up, because this is really a mess, and I imagine this mess is going to continue for a while. Joanne Kloppenburg needs to ask for a hand recount of every ballot in the state of Wisconsin, in my opinion. All right, we'll be back broadcasting again live next week. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll see you next week.
Good afternoon, this is KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, 93.7 San Diego, and 99.5 Bridgecrest, China Lake.